Disc 4 of Confronting the Taskmasters of Your Life. For those who would like, we will share information on how you can obtain material produced for Shiloh Place Ministries following the message.
And this morning we went through Genesis 1 and 2, and you can, or Exodus 1 and 2, and you can turn there and begin to pick up at the end of Exodus 2 where we're at this morning. We have to skip over one of the chapters that we would normally teach. I can't go there. There's just too much to cover. I feel like a pregnant goldfish about to explode. But we came to the point at the first of Exodus 2 where Moses is put into the Nile. He's given over to death, the faith of a mother and father, to release him into the divine purposes of God. And we found that Pharaoh's daughter risked death and punishment herself because Moses had the look of the city. He had what the word was beautiful, and in the Hebrews 11 we saw that word was city. He had the look of the city of God to it. That's what we're all looking for. We're so tired of Christianity the way in its normal mode, and we're looking for something that has the look of the city of God on it. Something that has the look of life to it and freedom and liberty flowing, and we'll risk our lives for that. Have you found it yet? Or have the taskmasters crushed the hope, crushed the life out of you? And we find that Moses grows up and he's identified with his brethren. He spent 40 years in Ramesses' house. And we learn the shepherd kings, that a foreign invasion had occurred about 4,000 B.C. and a group of shepherd kings evaded Egypt and they took over the throne and they embraced Joseph and his brethren and Israel grew to literally a nation within Goshen. And then the old line overthrew the shepherd kings in about 3700 B.C. And a new pharaoh was put in place, Ramesses the Great. 67 years he reigned, and one writer said every stone in his buildings was cemented by the human blood of the slaves, by the Israelites who spent 100 years in harsh bondage. Ramesses the Great, he had his eyes set on worldly mortality, yet today people remember the name Ramesses more because of Moses than because of Ramesses' great battles and great monuments. And see, Moses was raised in Pharaoh's house. He was raised in all the ways of Egypt, we read in Hebrews. He was raised in the Pharaoh's court, and he went to the colleges of the Hierapolis. And it was actually a college of war. And the history of Egypt speaks of a great Ethiopian battle. It was one of the greatest battles of ancient times. The hieroglyphics reveal that as many as a million Ethiopian troops had amassed to come against Egypt. And Egypt had less than half that many. And they went into the desert to fight the battle against Ethiopia and was led by a general. And the general's name in Egyptian is what today we would call Moses. And many theologians, especially the Israelites and the Jews, believe that general was the Moses we know. The word Moses means drawing out. He was drawn out of the Nile and he was given the name Moses. And the first battle took place to where the mighty Ethiopian army overran the Egyptian army. And the Egyptians retreated and wondered what were they going to do. And the general waited until the wind was just right and his army gathered all these wasps and nets, hornets. And when the wind began to blow and the Ethiopian army came in, they smashed all the hornet's nest, and the hornets came out mad as can be and angry and attacked the Ethiopian army, blowed downwind. And as they were running amok with just literally millions of hornets being released among them, at that point, an army outmanned and outbattled and outarmed attacked the Ethiopian army and destroyed it, one of the greatest victories of ancient battles. And the general of that army in the Egyptian name was Moses. I tend to think they were one and the same. We don't know for sure. But who trained Moses to lead an army of 3 million slaves through the wilderness for 40 years? Because first the natural, then the spiritual. And God equips the man. He equips the woman in Pharaoh's house. He equips us in Egypt for something, some great mission that lies ahead. And we learned last night, this morning, that everything God has intended for you to become, a gift of healing to your family, a vessel created to receive love and to give it away and release healing everywhere you go in life. It abides in you. That 1 John 3:9, His seed abides in you. And He's creating you to be what He designed you for at the moment of creation. He's intended for you to become that. But before you can become what God has created you to be, there must be a going out before there's a coming in. There's a season in Egypt. There's a season of equipping. My Egypt to see, my whole life from the time I was a small child, so wounded and bruised by the time I was 7 and 8 years old, anything to get out of the house. And the streets were safe down back then. By the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I'm riding a bike to the pier, fishing every day where my dad's friends were at. And they watched over me and they kept me. And I started learning how to catch fish. I started learning how to present a bait to hook shy fish. There was a fallen portion of the pier off the end, and they dumped rocks out there to create a reef, and you could see big gator trout out there, Jim. I mean, 8 to 10 pound gator trout would just lay out there, and they lived there year round, and nobody could catch them. And then old Mac, about 75 years old, he got up there and he started teaching me. I mean, the lightest line, the biggest shrimp you can get. No swivel, no sinker, no float, just a little tiny treble hook, tie it on the end and throw it out there and watch what those trout will do. And I go, and from the time I was 10 years old, catching more fish, becoming the top fisher, I was being equipped. What do you think I'm doing now? I was becoming equipped to present the bait in such a way, even overfished Christians will take the bait and say, yes, I long for what you're speaking of. Yes, I identify with that. But before there's a coming out, there must be a cry. Verse 23 of Exodus 2. Now it came about in the course of those days that the king of Egypt died, Ramesses. And the sons of Israel sighed because of their bondage. And they cried out, and their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered His covenant in Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And God saw the sons of Israel, and He took notice of them in the process of the time, that sigh of contentment, because they had been satisfied for 300 years in Egypt in the process of time. God changed all the political system to bring the people of God to where they begin to cry out for a coming out. And see, as long as your life is going well, as long as all your needs are met, as long as everything in your marriage is fine and dandy, as long as everything at work and church and life's there's not a cry. There's a self-satisfaction. And something begins to occur in our life and relationships. That's in God's timetable. Moses, we find is simmering and preparing and ready on the backside of the desert, but something had to happen first. We knew that he, at 40, took notice of his brethren. He slew an Egyptian that was beating one of the Israelites. He had to flee for his own life. He finds himself in Oreb, the place of desolation. And what's the message of tonight? The preparation of the messenger. The preparation of the messenger. Because before there's a going out in your family, before your family is going to be set free of the pain and the addictions of the past, God's got to prepare the heart of a messenger. But are you willing to be the one? Are you waiting for it to be another? Is the family, the aunts and the uncles, perhaps the children, perhaps your own marriage, is there a cry? Is there a sigh of I don't know how longer we can live within their pain? You see, God doesn't wait on revival. He didn't wait for them to become worthy of Him taking notice. He wasn't waiting for them to have a right religious understanding of deliverance. He was waiting for their sigh. He was waiting for their cry and groaning for deliverance. He was waiting for a present discontent with who they were. Israel had to want to escape. And without a want, without a cry, there's no freedom. They had to come to despise the taskmasters over their life. And is that what God is waiting for in your life? Pastor Roger, a friend of mine, now is with Shiloh Place ministering to the ministers. He'd been in minister 28 years and was quite comfortable in a small town, a church of 500, and seemed like he'd worked through many of the problems and everything going all right. And he'd have me come in and teach, and he'd say, yeah, that's great for my church, and have me in once or twice a year, but I really don't need that. I'm healed. I've got it all. I'm quite fine. This is for others, not for me. See, Roger wasn't ready yet. There was not that cry of verse 22 and crying out in their bondage. And then it was 1994. And it began first with one of the pyramid schemes and all of the church's money and property money and his own savings and everything gone because of a decision he made, and failure hit his way. And then he and his wife's closest friend in the church and his own secretary, and she dies of cancer, and a devastation there. And then the phone rings one day while they're at the hospital and his wife's dealing with some tests, and they said, an airplane's going to pick you up at the airport and bring you to Kinston, North Carolina. And his 23-year-old son in a flight school working in a minute market that night, an 18-year-old boy just wondered, what did it feel like to kill somebody? And walked in and put a gun to his son's chest and killed him right then. And for 3.5 years of depression, 3.5 years of questioning how and why, 3.5 years his cry began to reach God. And as I'm training his ministry team, and he's sitting on the back row with about 40 of the ministry team, suddenly the cry came out. And it was like a siren as the pain of over 50 years poured out of Roger. And he cried, and for over an hour, the wailing and weeping and crying. He thought it was for others until that time. And from that day, his whole life was reordered. He didn't want to pastor anymore. He went through all the training of ministry to pray healing and deliverance. He turned his church over recently, and he came on and he said, with Shiloh Place, my greatest passion and joy now is to be one-on-one with a minister. or the leader. But first, there had to be a cry of discontent. One writer said, if God's compassion were not to reach men until they remembered and prayed to Him, whom among us would ever have learned to pray to Him at all? And you notice in these verses, it doesn't say they cried to God. It just says their cry of hurt and bondage and discontent and pain, God heard it. And Roger's saying now from that season in his life was, when my pain outweighed my shame, then I was willing to change. And see, the shame had him hidden behind, I'm quite happy the way I am. I don't care if I ever reach anybody for God. I'm saved. I'm going to church. I'm a good Christian. But no purpose. Vision and purpose crushed by taskmasters to the point that you don't even see that there's a lifelessness and a barrenness. God didn't design us for barrenness. He designed us in Genesis 1 to be fruitful and to multiply. And for our lives to be a gift of His love to other people's lives. But there's a process of time. There's a reign of Pharaoh. There's a death of Pharaoh. But then there's a cry for something. Something new to take place in our life. And God waits for the cry. He waits for the sigh. Has it come forth from you yet? And this is why for the last 2,000 years, much of the organized, successful church has not come to a party that God has given. Because they have come to a place of self-satisfaction and there's no cry. There's no sigh of discontent. And God responds to a sincere groan that says, I don't like it where I'm at. I'm ready to risk whatever it takes to come out of this stagnation, out of this num-numville, and enter into a life, the greatest adventure there is, a life of fulfilling the purposes of God. I've been all over the world. I've been from the mountains of Tibet, the jungles of the Amazon, the jungles of Africa. From the streets of poverty within China to the cold north of Russia. I've caught sharks 15 feet long, hundreds of them, not a few. I've caught grouper on 5-pound snapper, live for bait, up to 450 pounds. My whole life has been one excitement, adventure, passion after another. But there's no greater excitement. There's no greater thrill than entering into the purposes of God in your life and seeing somehow your life impact other people's lives every day. The preparation in Egypt and the nations of the earth, the preparation in Egypt on the seas, and living a consumer life, a consumer Christian, living for, it's all about me, 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 me. It was all preparation in Egypt until a sigh, a cry went up. And what drove me to the sigh and cry was looking in the eyes of my family. And realizing they don't know who I am. They don't have a place in my heart. And the cry went up, oh God, change something in me. And then the revelation of Father's love. We talk about it in Restoring the Father's Love series. The revelation of the Father's love came and began a change and transformation that took me out of the Egypt and led me into what God has promised for my life. Healing and restoration of my family that would overflow into the nations of the earth. But God waits for a sincere cry from your heart. I want to be different. I want change. And it doesn't even have to be directed necessarily, God. He'll hear it. He'll hear it. And there's several principles in the preparation. several principles that as you begin to hear the cry and you begin to come out, that before your life is going to be a life that truly brings impact into other people's lives, there's some principles of preparation to go through. And the first one is going to be surrendering to God's purposes for your life. Not your purposes, God's purposes for your life. And we see in Exodus 3, 1 through 10, that Moses is now on the backside of the desert. Is that what it's going to take for you to surrender to the purposes? He's in Oreb. He's in the place of desolation. Have you noticed this weekend thus far and how often in the Bible it's in the place of desolation where we hear the voice of God? We saw that this morning in my own life. Salvation for most of us came during desolation. And in the place of desolation, that's where God begins to reveal Moses' true destiny to him. That he's going to be the one who draws out. He was drawn out of the Nile, but he's now going to be the one that draws others out of Egypt. And from this day forward, as God comes to him as a burning bush, and tells him, you're on holy ground, and begins to speak to him face to face. From this day on, Moses has a compelling, overpowering sense of destiny to fulfill something within his life. And from that day in December 1980, after being a Christian 11 months and being quite happy as a good Christian, that day when God showed me the nations of the earth just through that simple World Vision program, and I realized I can't go on. I looked under my Christmas tree and I saw all the presents. I realized all the money that God had given us, all the success. He'd set me free from drugs and alcoholism. He'd set me free from pornography, and He'd done so much for me. And I look at everything my son has and everything we have, and I realize, what is it all for? And I see the starving millions on television, and I realize, no, there's got to be something better than this. There's a greater adventure than living my life at sea. There's a greater adventure than living for what brings pleasure to me, contentment to me. And when I yielded myself to that, and the word that God gave, healing and restoration to the nations, I became a compelling, overpowering, driving sense that now for 23 years it has been driving me to a place that I can't be satisfied where I'm at now. People's lives are at stake. The nations are at stake. And how many people's lives here, how many here have been touched by Shiloh Place Ministries in one way or another? How many? Just hands up. What if I hadn't listened to that voice? Multiply this times 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 upon the nations. What if one man had said, no, I like it the way it is. And see, Moses, from that moment on, his whole life, though he knew Egypt to him meant death. Egypt to him meant if he goes back there, meant judgment, meant imprisonment, meant death. But he's willing to risk life, anything. Because once God speaks that voice to you, life is reordered. It can no longer go on as it's constantly gone. It can no longer be this place of self-satisfaction. G.A. Chamberlain said, what makes a saint is that he hears his call when it comes, and then he bends all the powers of body and soul and spirit to do what is recognized in the will and purposes of God. And as Roger's whole life fell apart with the murder of his son, and as healing came to him, his whole training for over 30 years was the pastor. He was one of the greatest loving, caring pastors I ever knew. But he said, God's given me a new purpose and a destiny. It's to heal the wounded and brokenhearted. It's so many other pastors are living out there content where they are, and yet inside they're really dead. And he spent the next 6-7 years giving his life to going through the Sanford training, the Kilstra training. I want to be trained in everything I could. In his 50s, and he says, I'm willing to leave the pastoring. I'm willing to leave that Monday salary every week. Because all I want to do, his whole life became a passion. I'm going to move all powers that be because I want to be a life that lives now to release healing one-on-one to people that have known the devastation that I've known. He's cut his salary over half because he says, I just want my life to count for healing couples one at a time. A driving passion. He came to me last week. He'd been in town 2 months. He'd lived in the Spindale, North Carolina area his entire life, his children there, his adult children there, his grandchildren there. It's all he'd ever known, and he ups and moves. His kids are saying, "What are you doing? You're crazy, Dad." He says, "There's something inside of me. I just want to be one-on-one with pastors. I just want to sit in a room. I don't want to preach anymore." Awesome preaching gift. One of my favorite preachers. But he says, "I just want to be one-on-one. I want to look them in the eye. I want to cry with them. I want to bless them." And see, that's what happened to Moses that day. As the taskmasters put you on such harsh bondage, the lords of service have you so captivated by Egypt, this materialistic world, religious tradition understanding of God, so captivated that you're so crushed in spirit that you no longer hear that voice saying, "There's something better out there. There's somebody out there that needs you." That yes, you've been devastated, you've been broken, you've been wounded, but you're the very one that can minister to someone. Can you hear that voice? It reorders everything. And without that voice, Proverbs 29:18, without that vision, that word, the people of God perish. They cast off restraint. Oh, they just give themselves to the whole Egyptian world system that is prophetically saying, this is what it will be like in the last days. And if you don't get this, there's enslavement. Christian enslavement. It was the people of God in bondage. And the church doesn't hear it. And Christians don't hear it. Enslaved to get all they can all they can get. It's not about anybody else but me, myself, and my house. And God is saying, you in the end days, please, please catch this. Exodus is in the end times. It's the end time book. It's the people of God born again, nice, paying their tithes, integrity, doing the right religious things, but no purpose, no destiny. And then the next generation sees no passion and they say, it's not real, because this matrix generation today, if they don't see passion, they don't want it. It's not real to them. And then we lose the next generation to their enslavement in Egypt and to the taskmasters. And see, when we begin to hear that voice, life is never the same. God is taking the gifts. He's taking the talents. He's taking everything I learned at sea. And he's applying it into my life. Vice president of a multi-million, billion-dollar corporation, my age. He says, I don't want it. And he's found himself a job in China, running another man's business. And his wife just lives every day from house church to house church and house church to house church, encouraging, healing. They were one of the couples in that group in the 1980s, trained in healing, trained in deliverance, heart prepared, and he began to hear the voice. He's saying, I'm having the greatest time of my life. My kids got grown up, got to college, got married off. And now I'm giving myself to the poor and the impoverished and the broken. And he says, the revival that's happening in China. And he's right in the midst of this. He said, it's the greatest thing in my life. It's better than the multi-million dollar deals he lived for so many years. are we crushed? The taskmasters causing us to serve the treasure cities with such harsh rigor and taskmaster and service that there's no life left. He's killed the vision. And we said this morning, Satan can't send you to hell once you accept Jesus Christ. He cannot send you to hell. And his goal now is steal the purpose of God from your life. Barrenness. No fruitfulness. And the next generation says, that's not real. There's no life. There's no passion. And secondly, preparation to become what God has created you to be. An awareness of the call and purpose of God in your life, we learned, will bring great testings of character. Moses raised in Pharaoh's house, the greatest schools, general over the armies, victorious battles, learns to lead troops through the wilderness. And then he, in Exodus 2:11, he identified with the people of God and trouble and testing began. In Hebrews 11, let's read in the Hall of Faith about it, Moses. And we begin to see some of the greatest area of testing and what he's credited for in verse 24 through 26. By faith, when he had grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasure of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. And by faith he kept the Passover, that's leaving the taskmasters behind. Here we see he refused. He refused the riches of Egypt, choosing rather to endure ill treatment. He was willing to go contradictory to the present flow of the religious and world system. And are you willing to go against the flow? When I got to Bible school in 1982 and had left the sea, we heard the story of how God had to just slaughter me to get me to the point to leave the sea. And I got there and we ended up in one of the classes with 60 other students that was called in the last 50 years the most unspiritual, critical, negative, judgmental, fault-finding group of students that they had had in 50 years. We would leave some of our teachers in tears, fleeing our room in tears, and we delighted in it. And I was right in the midst of that, and almost every single student gathered in. But in 1984, March 1st, due to graduate in 3 months, and I looked and I knew I had a divine plan upon my life. I knew God wanted to use me for something more than just catching fish. And we began to cry out. There was a divine discontent. There was a sigh. There was a cry. We cannot graduate this Bible school and go out as ministers in the spirit condition that we're in. And the Holy Spirit fell independently that night in our living room upon 4 students crying out, God, change something. We didn't even know what the change was. We didn't even know what the baptism of the Holy Spirit was at 11 o'clock, March 1st, 1984. Came upon us like a rushing wind. We fell out on the floors wailing in laughter. It woke up the whole dormitory. Revival hit that school over the next 6 weeks because 4 of us refused to go against the flow. That once God comes to you and brings a word, you will contradict everything that is around you. And everyone began to criticize that little group of 4 and come against us. All the other students turning against us as they'd hear us in a meeting in my living room every night going to 12 or 1 o'clock, and it'd go from laughing to weeping. weeping, to confessing our sins. And the next night there were six, and the next night 10, and the next night 12. And after 6 weeks, over 70% of the body is baptized in the Holy Spirit, and we didn't even know the theology of it. What can happen when one, two, or four, 25 teachers filled with the Holy Spirit as revival hit that campus on the streets of Atlanta, 500 saved over the next 2 months? How many lives out there? How many lives out there if we live and slave to the taskmasters in Num-Numville? How many lives will not be touched? Because we rejected the voice. We rejected the call. And see, God is authoring such unheaval in the whole political system of Egypt. He's authoring such unheaval in this whole world system that's become, we don't even know where life's going to be next time. News last week. It's pretty sure in the next year or two, yes, there will be some dirty bombs released somewhere. And it's sitting right on the edge, a world at the point of complete calamity and turmoil. This is the world Moses lived in, and it's the world that it's going to be like in the end times, with pharaohs and taskmasters that are looking for extermination of the people of God. But are there going to be some deliverers rise up and said, no, it will be emancipation, and I want to be a part of it. The crossing, a part of it. But it'll be going against the flow. It'll be going against the flow of the religious system. Hey, you're already going against the flow in a United Methodist Church. You might as well go a little further. And there will be a test in what we focus our life on in this season, still under number two. A test on what are you going to focus your life on? Because if we don't have a sense of focusing upon what the ultimate and eternal purposes of God are in our life, we just drift into the world system. And Satan says, the Pharaoh says, gotcha! Barrenness. Fruitlessness. And I came into the kingdom and I said, I can't live that way. And if I was passionate about the sea, I'm going to be passionate about the things of God. And so much of this community, passionate about business, passionate about work, people of integrity, people of success. What could happen if you heard the voice of God say, get ready. Go through the preparation. What would happen if truly you knelt here like Washington and others said, we will risk everything for a revolution? Because the present presentation of the gospel is not working. There must be a revolution, an agape reformation that turns this world upside down. And I want to be a part. I want to be at the forefront. Because I realize my kids are watching. Is this real to me? Or is this just some religious game? And it'll be a test of my character. And another part of those testings of character will be the test of pleasures or treasures. Moses in Hebrews 11 said, I'll not have the treasures of Egypt. I want the divine purpose and call of God upon my life more. And after the first year of Shiloh Place, and I'm just barely able to survive, and God had come and regenerized us with the word at the end of 1991 and given my wife the word that we're to go on, and we're not to in any way give ourselves to full-time ministry in other areas, but give ourselves to healing and restoration. Then along comes one of the smoke screens. One of my close friends, a very successful businessman with plants in many countries, he says, Jack, I'm looking for a Joseph. And I don't want somebody that's been in the textile business. He owned textile plants around the world. He says, I need somebody to turn my business over to. And I don't want them coming from any other textile business. I want them totally green, that I can take them from scratch. And they got a heart of Joseph that is faithful with that which is another's. And I can put 2 years in that man, and I can turn this whole thing over to them. I'll still own it, but he'll run this whole thing. Six figures starting. Jack, you're the man. You've got the heart. You've got the passion and the tenacity. He says, Jack, if you'd come, give me your life and let me form you. I can make you into my Joseph. And I promise you, you'll be a very wealthy man. Every time I finally am convinced I'm walking on God's path, and I'm able to pass a test of discomfort and betrayal, he throws another test in there. And when that year I'd made $18,000, and that year there's not 10 cents ever in the bank, and a man offers you $150,000 the first year plus bonuses, the test of will it be the Word of God? What would have happened to some of the families in this room? Some of the families in countries like China and Poland and Germany and Holland and England and Scotland and all over the world. What would have happened if I said yes? I'm tired of the pain. I'm tired of the poverty. I'm tired of nothing. And I told him no. And a year later, he comes back and he says, Jack, I'm still looking. He says, why don't we go $250,000? He says, you can run this thing. Anything you put your hands to is going to be done right and done blessed and with integrity. And I can trust you with my life. I can trust you with my treasures. Just come with me. That was a 21-day fast. And that year I made $24,000. And some of you are in that very test right now. You're in that very place right now. Will it be the pleasures of God or the treasures of Egypt? God will still love you. You're still born again. Whatever choice you make, it doesn't change God's mind about you. But what we focus our life on is what our children will focus theirs on. And I said, no, God. And the third year. And I finally looked far and wide and I found him a man. Because I didn't need to go through that again. But in 2 years, he wasn't the man. And he comes back again and he says, I can't find the man that I can entrust with my wealth. Won't you come, Jack? And I don't regret giving up the millions. Because Jesus said, if you're willing to give up houses and wealth and homes and family, if you're willing to give in this life, he's going to give you so much more. And I've received the greatest treasure. I received the greatest wealth that anybody can receive. The hands that went up when I asked. How many lives have been helped? And I have to go back to the file cabinet often and go read the testimonies. And every time I choose the pleasures of God over the treasures of Egypt. There's nothing wrong with wealth. This man, it's his gift. And he makes money out of everything he puts his hands to. But he pours it back into the nations of the earth. He pours it back in, yes, to his family and they're secure. But he pours it into China and he pours it into Russia. He pours it into the lives of others because God has given some people the ability to live right in the midst of wealth, just like Joseph. And not to let the ownership of the wealth take ownership of them, but it is just a tool by which the nations of the world are being touched. And for them, that's their call. That's their purpose. And for one mayor, this man turned it over to someone else, and he tried to go into ministry, and he traveled some with me, and he wanted to do things I do, and he lost $1 million that year, and he said, "It's the greatest $1 million I've ever spent. I found out I'm called to make money." And he went back in his business and started making money and putting it out there into the lives of the nations. That's his call. That's his purpose. It's what drives him. Every contact, every business, every plant, it drives him. Money for the nations. Wealth for the nations. And that may be your call. Then hear that voice and do it with passion. And find ministries that have the life of the city. Your local church. For many, the crossing that has the look of the city of God in it, and funnel those finances there. And thirdly, in preparation for coming out so you can lead others out, be aware of God's timing in fulfilling God's purposes and call. Be aware of His timing. Because in Exodus 2:11, He took notice of the people of God. He took notice of his brethren, and he thought, now is the timing. But he went, and he wasn't sent. And because he followed his timing, probably rooted in the pride of Pharaoh's house and the lack of brokenness, he followed his own timing. Moses left dead Egyptians in the sand behind him. And how many times I've stepped out and I wasn't sent. I wasn't sent by my wife. I wasn't sent by my children. I wasn't sent by pastoral leadership. I didn't leave unity in my relationships. And I just went out because there was so much brokenness behind me. Nobody sent me. I just went looking to build the praise of man and build my treasure palaces of honor and recognition. And how many dead Egyptians did I leave in the sand behind me? And the timing of God is so important, and to listening to the call. There will be delay, but we call delay mistakes in this instant maturity society that we have today. No, timing is part of the preparation. And the greater the call, the greater the preparation. 40 years in Pharaoh's house, and then for Moses, 40 years on the backside of the desert. Because for every year of pride and arrogance and the world system built in him, there was a year of the backside of the desert tending sheep where he learned humility and brokenness. And we'll see more of that in the morning. And number four. That part of the preparation is the danger of identifying with God's people. And we said it this morning. Oh, to live with saints above, that will be pure glory. But oh, to live with saints below, that will be another story. And see what happened when he identified with the people of God. Trouble. I heard Rick Howard say one time, "The evidence of the baptism of the Holy Spirit is not speaking in tongues. The evidence of the baptism of the Holy Spirit is trouble." That once you got it, you take on an attitude, "I got it, you're going to get it too." And trouble comes. And soon as Moses thought he had it and he was ready, and he identifies with the call of God, trouble came. And in Acts 7:23, when Moses was 40 years old, it came to him in his heart to visit his brethren. You see, when God's ready to act in your life, then your life is to merge into union with the people of God. But even as we begin to move into that, we are going to begin to experience the hurts that others have overflowing upon us. And it's going to tempt us to move into isolation, but isolation is barrenness. Isolation is emptiness. Proverbs 18:1, he who separates himself thinks of his own desires. There's not life in that. There's not the look of the city in that. And as God gave us the Word, in December 1990, established Shiloh Place Ministries, Healing and Restoration. He was sending us to bring healing and restoration path to pastors, but we went into that mission with an attitude. We've been hurt by leadership. We've been hurt by pastoral leadership. And when you go and start trying to minister to people with an attitude, they don't want what you got. And there was a few people, for the next few years, a few people that would come here and there. But God kept saying, you're going to take healing and restoration to the nations. But as long as I had an attitude thinking that the others are my source of pain, I couldn't minister to them. And as long as I had a need for acceptance from church leaders, you can't minister effectively to a person that you need something from. You can only minister effectively to people that you have no need from. Because if I need something from you, I will manipulate you to get that need met. I will direct conversations, I will direct ministry in such a way to try to get you to come to my side and to meet my need. And see, part of that was what kept me going around the mountain over and over and over and over again. I had to have a deep breaking forth of God's love, the Restoring the Father's Love series, the book. There had to be such an experience in God's love that no longer did I look to man to become my source and pastors and leaders. I came to a place to where I realized God is the source. And I became to right relationship with ministers and pastors, and God began to transform me as I went to many of the past pastoral leadership in my lives, and I asked them to forgive me. I apologized for the immaturity of my life, and when that happened, miraculous breakthroughs began to come in my life and family. And see, the first evidence of miraculous and divine deliverance will be a renewed sense of identity with the people of God in your life. But that very renewed sense will be one of the areas of testing. Identifying with the brethren is always a part of what God is doing on earth. But yes, it'll be a source of some of our greatest tests. And point number five is the whole biblical law of separation. Part of our preparation is going to bring separation. God had to bring about the separation of Moses from Egypt as well as the separation of Egypt from Moses before he could lead the people out. Hebrews 11:27, by faith, Moses forsook Egypt. And see, when God begins to move in a person's life to prepare him, God is not so concerned with how that preparation happens as much as He is concerned that it does happen. Now, what did it take in Moses' life for him to separate from Egypt and Egypt to separate from him? Murder. And you think God could never use you. And you think you've committed the unpardonable sin. You think, well, I tried stepping forward in the purposes of God and I just totally made a mess of everything and I'm not going to try that again. Look at what God used in Moses' life. He will take that that's meant as evil against you and He'll turn it around for good. For good. It took murder. God wasn't the author of that. That was man's flesh. That was man's pride. But God took murder to separate Egypt from Moses. And see, in 1982, my whole life was so addicted to the sea. My whole life and identity and everything was the sea. And there was a joy in our life. There was an excitement in our life. God was using us among the youth and the teens and in 1982 in our church. And there was a freedom flowing for that season. Then my wife hit the depression in her life. And then we ended up at Bible school, and I went from kind of an easy to get along with to a degree person to a total monster for 2 years at Bible school. I became the most unlivable, angry, critical, negative, judgmental person. My wife and I hardly spoke for a year and a half. But God used that. And He'll take some of the deepest periods of devastation in your life for that to bring separation of the flesh in you. There must be a separation of the idols in our flesh. Of the Egypt from our own lives. And in that season of desperateness is when our cry went up to God. And the Holy Spirit fell a year and a half into Bible school and transformed our life and took our marriage into new dimensions. You see, the whole principle of separation comes down to this. You can only lead others out of what you have been led out of. You can only lead others out of what you have been led out of. And He could not lead the people of God out of Egypt without many dead Egyptians being left in the sand behind Him as long as Egypt was still in Him. There must be a separation from Egypt. There's a coming out before there is a going in. Dwight L. Moody said, "In Egypt, Moses learned to be somebody. In the wilderness, he learned to be nobody. And in the last 40 years, in God's timing, Moses learned how God could use a somebody who was willing to be a nobody. In the fishing industry from the 1970s to 1982, I was a somebody. Top hook. And in 81 and 82, in the denominational system I was in, I was the number one speaker at all the youth conferences. Get them up there to share all the sea stories and tell the kids how to get saved, and all the kids come running to the altars. And I thought I was somebody. And then I got to Bible school with all the blue bloods, all the preacher's kids, that all knew how to play instruments and all knew how to sing so eloquently and had all these gifts, and many of them had college degrees and going now through that, and I'm just this lowly old fisherman that can't sing, that can't play any instrument, that can't do anything. And the somebody became a nobody. And why do you think I was so miserable? And I took it all out of my wife. And I took it out of my kids. And I became one of the negative, critical, judgmental, angry leaders because I was one of the older students than there. And there had to be a separation. But it begins with a cry that comes forth from our heart. And Moses had to leave Egypt and spend 40 years in the wilderness for the separation to take place and a life of pride to become humility. Because that was what was going to be necessary for Israel to be free. You can never minister something that hasn't been worked into your own life. One of our team members in our 60s recently sent a newsletter and report of what was going on in their life. And they've been in perhaps 20 of our meetings. And they said, and I teach the same conferences on Father's love over and over and over again. They said, "I cry in every conference. I know the stories. I know what Jack's going to say before he says it. But every time he says it, I start crying again. And I can hardly minister. I've been to about 20 conferences, and I can't even hardly minister. I'm crying so much. I'm so broken. God's dealing with me. Why? Because it's the journey of brokenness and shatteredness. And it's not the words that you speak. It's what God's done in your heart. And if it's flowing from your spirit, you can hear it over and over and over and over and over again. But it's something new and it's life every time. And God's going to lead you out first. So it's not about you speaking eloquently. So it's not about you having all the theology exactly down and right. It's something that comes from your spirit. It's just who you are And often it doesn't even take a word. I'm so shocked. And in other countries, just even last week, praying over one little Cree lady about 70 years old, and she can't speak a word of English. All she knows is Cree. And I just speak to her, and I just hold her face in my hands. And I just look in her eyes, and I start speaking to her what a father never said to her as a child. And she's just wailing and screaming and crying. And her spirit heard every word, though she understood none of it. And see, we think we have nothing to offer. I can't speak. I really don't know. No. But as God leads you out of Egypt, I mean, your spirit is just going to breathe life upon other people. And it all begins with hearing the cry. The sigh of your life. I'm no longer satisfied just wasting my life upon the world system. I want change so that my life impacts others. And as you come out, others are coming with you. A great drawing out. What would really happen if this just wasn't words? What would really happen if this just wasn't another weekend meeting? And you really believe this? And you really got a hold of this and said, yeah. What would life be like for you a year from now? What would life be like at the crossing 5 years from now? And this just wasn't another going through the motions of church. I've been around long enough. I know how many meetings I've sat in, and it just comes and goes and nothing changes. But what would happen if we really believed what the preacher is saying here? But don't call me a preacher. I'm a sea captain, not a preacher, okay? If we really grabbed this and the cry of our heart really went up, God, I want my life to impact others. You don't have to end up in China. You don't have to end up in Africa. You can be the successful businessman in what you do, or nurse, or doctor, or lawyer, but your whole life is about the divine purposes of God. You can continue being the businessman, making the millions of dollars, but the wealth doesn't own you. It's all about the divine purposes of God for the kingdom. It's not about you coming in line with what God wants from your life and now ending up serving in the jungle somewhere, taking malaria pills every day. It's about just wanting our life to impact. Eternal. This is what the Matrix generation is looking for. They want their life to count. They want something they can give their life to. And number 6 is that what we just said. You can never minister something that hasn't been worked into your own spirit. Too often Christians speak or counsel about things they haven't lived through themselves. And the Matrix generation know it. And they don't listen to anything you have to say. And they know it's not real. They know it's just out of a book somewhere. It's another snow job. And society today is looking for that's real. Preaching has changed. And it has to come with passion. It has to come. The two things this generation's looking for is passion and experience. And that leads others out. That causes others to long for what you have. And something begins to rise up with them and says, I'm no longer satisfied with where I'm at. And number 7, we're having to hurry on. In the process of preparation for your life, it'll involve something that cuts totally against the grain of our fleshly ideas. It'll cut against the grain of everything we were. Remember, the new kings had overthrown the shepherd kings. And the new kings of Egypt hated and had a stench in their nostrils for anything that dealt with the old line of rulers of Egypt, the Hyksos rulers, the shepherd kings, they despised and hated shepherds. They wouldn't go near them. They were an abomination unto Ramesses and Ramesses' house. And what was Moses raised in? He was raised with that whole value system. But as the divine purposes of God came to his life and he began to embrace that and seek to walk in it, even though he started out walking in it in the flesh, now it acquired 40 years of going against the grain of everything he was and everything he believed in. Where does he find himself after 40 years? What's his job description now? The very thing that he had hated for 40 years in his life, he became. And many times as we begin to step into the divine purposes of God, it will require humiliation. Because you can't be humiliated if you're humble. Only the proud can be humiliated. And it required such a brokenness within Moses' life, preparing him, leading him into that. Humiliation is often a part of God's preparation. Where there's no pride, there's no humiliation. Just humility and God exalting you into His presence. And whatever the preparation in the flesh, whatever the degrees, whatever the experience, one of the acts of preparation is God of God is it's going to cut across everything. What's happened here in the last 10 years at the crossing? It went against the grain. I love talking to Tom. He said, man, I've been here 16 years. And as soon as he said, I've been here 16 years, I said, that man has touched the heart of God. Because he's been here long enough for God to move in such a way that it cut against the grain of everything he was. And those of you that have been here through the years of transition, you've heard the voice of God. Because it cut against the grain of the religious structure and system of what you've known in the past. And with each fresh move of God, it's usually going to cut against the grain of everything we are. Now here's the kicker. I hate people. I flunked speech class because I had so much fear of man. I couldn't stand in a pulpit. I would rather fail than go to class and stand in front of the class. I flunked English class and I wrote a book. Everything I've become cuts against the grain of the natural. And the greatest passion of my life is now one-on-one with people. As long as I get plenty of solitude, if I don't get plenty of solitude, I'm going to hurt you. But see, as God comes to you and begins to move in deliverance and draw you out, it's going to cut against the grain of what you've been, of what you are. He doesn't hand out position. It comes through brokenness and humility and embracing the divine purposes of God for our life. First thing David said to me, isn't this just crazy? Here I am, executive pastor, and I've never studied theology. Yes, didn't bother me a bit. I knew as soon as he said that, cuts against the grain. And God's preparing for many people's lives to be touched. The preparation for God's purposes in your life, you'll hear the voice of God. There'll be a cry of deliverance. It'll cut against the grain. And then number eight, and lastly, for Moses, there was a turning aside of all his distractions in order to see God and to hear his voice clearly. He was visiting himself with the sheep. And then the fire in the bush and the voice of the God says, come closer. Turn aside. And see, Moses was willing to leave the courts of Egypt and come into simplicity. The backside of the desert, solitude. Come into the place of silence where he no longer heard all the other voices, and then submission to the divine purposes of God for his life. That's why I have to get up in the morning before everybody else is and just sit. It's the only time the voices stop. Because the voices in my head never cease. And it makes it so hard to hear what voice is coming from where. And I have to get up in the morning before anybody else does. And I've just got to be alone. I shared with Scott yesterday. We had a ministers meeting, partners in harvest meeting for 5 hours yesterday, and we ended with an hour and a half of just laying on the floor with music playing. And I told him, June 6th, I've been in the ministry 20 years. I've been in many ministers' meetings, and that's the first small group meeting we ever prayed in. More than just having a little prayer, blessing, but I mean really prayed. And it wasn't so much prayer as listening for the voice of God. Just laying there for an hour and a half, and just listening. What are you saying? Spending a few moments, but see, it's so rare. And that's why when I get up in the morning, I used to get up in the morning and spend 2 hours a day praying. I don't do that anymore. I get up in the morning and I just put in something like Come to the Waters, the music we've been playing, and I just put in and I just sit at my desk and I just say, here I am, Dad. And I just open the curtains where I can look outside and I just sit there and just come talk to me. You better get here quick before my mind turns on. Some of you know exactly what I mean, especially a businessman. The only way kids can get my attention when they're little, they just have to come up to Daddy. Daddy's mind's over here and over there and over there, and they have to come up to, look at me, Daddy, look at me, look at me. And see, turning aside and just not a formal, I've got to do this in order to be a good Christian. No. God, I want to hear your divine plans, not mine. Man, I'll scheme you right out of all the plans for Shiloh Place. I just want to hear your voice and no other. You see, God did not go to so much trouble to get you saved, to make it hard to hear his voice. And just stepping aside for a little bit and just say, I'm here, Lord. Here am I, send me. You see, what you walk out of is what you'll lead others out. From that which you've endured, you'll lead forth others. From that which you've tasted and experienced and tried and tested, from that source will come spiritual authority, not necessarily a title or position, but spiritual authority that'll bring others out. And it's all part of the preparation.
If you would like to order this product or any other material available at Shiloh Place Ministries, you may reach us at 843-365-8990 or write to us at Shiloh Place Ministries, P.O. Box 5, Conway, South Carolina, 29528. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. For our friends comfortable with the computer, visit our website at www.shilohplace.org, or you may email us at info@shilohplace.org.